بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله، نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره، ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا. من يهده الله فلا مضل له، ومن يضلل فلا هادي له. وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد، فإن أحسن الكلام كلام الله، وخير الهدى هدى محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم، وإن شر الأمور محدثاتها، وكل محدثة بدعة، وكل بدعة ضلالة، وكل ضلالة في النار. So today is lesson 58 in our series on the book Al-Ubudiyya of Shaykh al-Islam Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah. And in the last lesson we completed the explanation of the book with the explanation of Shaykh Salih Al-Fawzan hafizahullah. And so what we want to do in this lesson, inshallah ta'ala, and it might even take two lessons, but we want to just recap with a summary of the main essential, you know, points of the book. We don't want to just complete the book and then, you know, move on without really you know, trying to understand the general structure of the book and what are the essential lessons we should have learnt from this book. And so that's what we want to do, inshallah ta'ala, in today's lesson. We'll try to summarize it in today's lesson. If not, it might even take two. We'll see, inshallah. But there are seven points that we can take from this book, Al-Ubudiyya. And so the book is a question, it's answer to a question, as you know. The questioner, he mentioned the verse in Surah Al-Baqarah, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ اعْبُدُوا رَبَّكُمْ, to the end of the ayah, verse 22-23, which mentions, O mankind, worship your Lord, to the end of the verse. So after mentioning this verse, the questioner, he basically had four questions. He said, what is ibadah? And what is it? What are its branches? What is ibadah? Second question was, does all of the religion enter into ibadah, enter into worship? Does the entire religion comprise worship? The third question is, what is the reality of ubudiyya? What is servitude? What is, you know, enslavement, al-ubudiyya? What is it? And what is its reality? And the fourth question was, is al-ubudiyya, is this state, this description of being a servant of Allah, is it the highest rank, the highest station in this life and the next? Right? So these are the four questions to which Shaykh al-Islam Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah, obviously he wrote, he composed this book. So, from the main points that we should take from this book, the first one that Shaykh al-Islam mentions is, first of all, the definition of ibadah. Ta'riful ibadah. What's the actual definition of worship? What is worship? So, as you know, we mentioned a number of definitions from what Ibn Taymiyyah said. The first definition is here, ismun jami'un likulli ma yuhibbuhu Allah wa yardah min al-aqwal wal-a'mal al-zahira wal-batina. Right, so we know we should have in our notes the definition of ibadah, which is everything that Allah loves and is pleased with. So the word ibadah is a comprehensive term, ismun jami', comprehensive term for everything that Allah loves, likulli ma yuhibbuhu Allah wa yardah, everything that Allah loves and is pleased with, from the statements, min al-aqwal wal-a'mal, and actions, al-zahira wal-batina, which are both outward and inward. Right? This is the most comprehensive and the best definition that was given by Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah. And he then gave many examples at the beginning of the book. So he said, for example, from the examples or from the furu' of ibadah, from the branches of ibadah, include as-salat, the prayer, as-siyam, fasting, as-zakah, giving charity, al-hajj, which are the four major pillars, and then as-sadaqah, wa-shukr, silatul arham, you know, which is charity, gratitude, keeping the ties of kinship, al-wafa bil-uhud, fulfilling one's promises, contracts, ikramul jar, honoring the neighbor, and so on and so forth. All of the, you know, everything comes into worship. So, then Ibn Taymiyyah mentioned just a point where often in the Quran we see a verse similar to the following, right? Where Allah Azzawajal, He says, فَعْبُدْهُ فَعْبُدْهُ, worship Allah, وَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَيْهِ, and place your reliance upon Him. فَعْبُدْهُ وَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَيْهِ. In this verse, Allah Azzawajal mentioned al-ibadah, which is فَعْبُدْهُ, and then He mentioned, which is am, general, then He mentioned something that enters into ibadah, which is tawakkul, وَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَيْهِ. And so, this means that in the Quran, this is from the angle of, you know, when you add something which is, like when you mention something general, then you add something specific which enters into that general. I'll give you another example. Second example is Inna Allaha ya'muru bil adli wal ihsan wa ita'i dhil qurba. It's another verse. Indeed, Allah, He commands with al-adl, with justice, and al-ihsan, benevolence, kindness, and giving to, in charity, to the near relative. Right. These the second and the third thing, benevolence, kindness, and giving to the relative, they both enter into al-adl. It is from al-adl, justice, to be benevolent and to give to the near relative. So here's an example of the general category and then something specific mentioned after that as well. There's many examples in the Quran. There's a verse in the Quran which Allah mentions the Malaika, and then He mentions after that Jibreel with Mikal. So why did He mention the angels first and then mention Jibreel and Mikal, who are from the angels? Right? This is something that you know, is obviously is permissible as a, in the language. There's a purpose and a reason behind it. So in the Quran, we see the word ibadah, abd, and the various derivations, you know, fa'budhu, and so on and so forth. And then after that, there might be something which enters into worship mentioned alongside it, such as tawakkul, such as ashukr, and many other deeds. This is what we find in the Quran. So anyhow, this is point number one. You should now know what is the definition of ibadah. This is the most comprehensive definition. The second point, once we understand what is ibadah, the second issue Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah discussed is, okay, now that we understand the ta'rif and the definition of ibadah, what's its status and what is its importance? This is point number two. This is the second thing from the book. Point number two. And obviously, its importance, very, very clearly, is that this ibadah is the reason and the purpose for which Allah created the creation, and He created jinn and men. Right? So this verse is very clear, Surah Dhariyat, وَمَا خَلَقُتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. I did not create the jinn and men, except that they may worship Me. Right? So this al-ibadah is the actual purpose and the wisdom and the reason for which Allah created the jinn and men, and obviously around them, you know, the creation. And it is for this very ibadah that Allah Azawajal sent the messengers and sent the prophets. Right? And then you have the verses in the Quran, وَلَقَدْ بَعَثْنَا فِي كُلِّ أُمَّةٍ رَسُولًا أَنِ اعْبُدُوا اللَّهَ وَاجْتَنِبُوا الطَّاغُوتِ. Right, we sent in every nation a messenger with the command to worship Allah and to avoid the false deities. So This is the importance of worship, and through this worship do the creatures, which are the jinn and the men, they attain perfection. Right? It is through this ibadah that we attain perfection. Once we actualize it, right? Once we put it into practice, then we become the ibad, the servants of Allah. And this description of being an abd is the description given to the best of Allah's, you know, what He created, the prophets, the messengers, the angels, and, you know, the most righteous and upright from His creation, right? So we see in the Quran and the Sunnah the description of the prophets and messengers, the messenger of Allah himself, and likewise the angels, likewise the prophets in general, and, you know, even the messenger of Allah, when he was taken on the Isra and Mi'raj, Allah referred to him as an abd. Alright? Subhanalladhi asra bi abdihi laylan min al masjid al haram ila al masjid al aqsa. Glorified be he who took his servant. Right? So he described him as an abd when he raised him, you know, and took him on the night journey and raised him. So the point being that worship, its importance is that it's the purpose for which we have been created. And when we actualize this worship, and we do it in the way that's been commanded and requested, we then reach perfection. We reach perfection in, you know, in human character and you know, being a righteous, pious servant of Allah, we reach perfection. And the best of Allah's creation, they are described with the label of abd or ubudiyya. We see this in the Quran, the angels, the prophets, the messengers. And even the messenger of Allah, he was ordered, wa'bud rabbaka hatta ya'tiyaka al-yaqeen. Right? So, worship your Lord until there comes to you the certainty, meaning death. This means that being a servant of Allah, being an abd, is something that it's not something that, you know, it's temporary. No, rather, this is an attribute that you must possess all the way until death. Right? So nobody can escape being a servant of Allah. Nobody can escape or avoid being a servant of Allah. And anyone who thinks he can, anyone who thinks he's not in need of being a servant of Allah, then he is very, very astray. He is far, far astray. And he's very ignorant as well. Right? So, this is the status and the importance of ubudiyya or ibadah. Right? These few points. That it's the very purpose for which we have been created. Secondly, by actualizing it, that's the only way we reach perfection. There is no other way to perfection. Right? Like, for example, you know, you have all these other philosophies and religions and whatever else. You know, they will tell you, you know, you reach perfection by accepting Jesus as your Lord and Savior. He died for your sins. This is how you reach perfection. Well, that's not true. That's a lie against Allah and His, you know, and His religion. Or they say, you know, you might have someone who says, well, you know, you just meditate, and through meditation, you kind of, you know, merge with a universal consciousness, and then, you know, you lose all your desires and you become perfect. Perfection is to be free of desires completely in every way possible. This is how you reach perfection, right? And others, like many of the philosophers, they try to devise philosophies which they think they lead to perfection. So they say, well, perfection is all about being charitable and altruistic, right? If you just try to be, or it's all about love and you know, altruism, right? And if you just use that as a principle in your life, you will reach perfection. Right? So basically, all of the people who have departed from revelation, authentic, undistorted revelation, then you see they've deviated in so many different ways, so many different sayings, and they believe and think that those ways are the ways that you reach perfection. But that's not true. The only way you reach perfection, you become a servant who is complete in every sense, in his character, and he has all of those qualities, you know, of piety, righteousness, charity, generosity, being just, and all the qualities. The only way you can bring about those qualities is to be an abd of Allah, to be enslaved only to Allah. That's the asl, the foundation of all of these other qualities and all of these other things which are from perfection, right? So, and also, so we're still on point number two, the importance of worship. Everything that we see from the religion, it enters into ibadah, right? So we have the hadith of Jibreel alayhi salam. What is Islam? What is Iman? What is Ihsan? That's the entire religion. All of the religion, Islam is outward, right? This hadith of Jibreel, what does it show? It shows that first of all, Islam is whatever is outward, right? So it's what you see outwardly from a person. He says the shahada, he prays, he fasts, he gives, you know, zakah, makes charity. He does all of the deeds of righteousness which are outward. This is Islam. Then he asked about Iman. And Iman is something inward and hidden. We can't see, right? We can't see what's in the heart of a hypocrite and whether he really truly believes in Allah, the Messenger, the Book. We don't know. This is hidden, right? Iman is something hidden. So Iman is inward, Islam is outward. And thirdly, Al-Ihsan, which is like a level of perfection, which is that you worship Allah as if you see Him. Even though you can't see Him, then He certainly sees you. Meaning that you worship Allah being mindful of Allah, right? So the hadith of Jibreel, if you try to connect this to the definition of ibadah, what did Ibn Taymiyyah say? هي اسم جامع لكل ما يحبه الله ويرضاه من الأقوال والأعمال الظاهرة والباطنة, right? So the definition of ibadah is everything that Allah loves and is pleased with from the statements and actions, whether outward or inward, right? So connect that definition to the hadith of Jibreel, because the meaning is contained within the hadith of Jibreel, right? So this shows, and this is Ibn Taymiyyah answering the second question, right? This is the second of the four questions. Here Ibn Taymiyyah is answering that question. Yes, ibadah, all of the religion enters into ibadah, right? Everything that is in the religion, which is either wajib or mustahab, it is from ibadah. So the whole religion is ibadah. And then he also says, and in fact this really can also be in point one as well, because if you remember, Ibn Taymiyyah mentioned, or some of the other scholars, they mentioned another definition of ibadah, which is kamalul hubb ma'a kamalil dhul. Right? Kamalul hubb ma'a kamalil dhul. Another way to define what is worship, this is more in terms of the reality of worship, right? It is to combine the perfection of love with the perfection of humility and submissiveness, right? These two things have to be combined together for it to be considered worship. There has to be the perfection of love and the perfection of humility and compliance. Let me give you some examples to illustrate. You know that Fir'aun, he enslaved Bani Israel, yes? He enslaved them, right? They were forced to, you know, they were placed into dhul, right? They were humiliated and forced into compliance. Does this constitute worship of Fir'aun? No, because it wasn't done with love. It's not done with love. So this does not constitute worship, right? Conversely, if you have, for example, let's say the Christians, right? They say we love Jesus, and they claim to have the extremity of love, but you see, they do not have al-dhul. Al-dhul meaning that you don't humble yourself and comply with the actual law, the law that Isa alayhi salam he came to affirm, which is the law of the Torah, right? Of not eating pork, of being circumcised, and of not, you know, all the other things, whatever. So this does not constitute worship. You can't just basically say, yes, I love the prophets of Allah, I love Isa, I love this, I love... And then there's no compliance. There's no, you know, humility and submissiveness. This also cannot be worship either. Rather, it is only when you combine the two together, this then becomes worship. So one without the other cannot be considered to be worship. So this is really the second point. And so far, just from these two points, you can see that Islam as a religion, as the way of truth, is distinct from everything else, because the label Islam is on the basis of a description or a quality of the servant, right? Rather than being the name of a prophet, or the name of a place, or the name of, you know, it's describing a state, al-Islam, submission, being an abd, right? It is not like Hinduism, or Buddhism, named after people, or Christianity, right? Or whatever it might be. And also, when you see all of the polytheists, and the Jews, and the Christians, and the Magians, all of these people, you see that, this notion or this idea of being an abd of Allah, being a servant, being a slave of Allah, it's basically violated, because the polytheists are worshipping other than Allah. They're worshipping stones, trees, idols, animals. The Yahud, they worship the rabbis, because they've turned the rabbis to be lords besides Allah, and they consider them to be divine. The Nasara, likewise, they worship their priests, they worship Isa alayhi salam. The Magians, the fire worshippers, they believe in a god of good and a god of evil. So they err in Allah's rububiyya and uluhiyya as well after that. And likewise, the atheists are just, they are mushrikun as well. They are polytheists, because the difference between them and the other polytheists is that, like, for example, the polytheists, when they worship an idol, or they worship the star or the sun or the moon, they give these things qualities or powers that belong to Allah Azza wa Jal, right? So, for example, they see the sun, and they say the sun it gives life, and because it has a life force, because it gives life to vegetation and so on and so forth, it must be like a deity, must be a god, and so therefore we should give it some devotion and respect it, so that basically our needs continue to be fulfilled, right? So they affirm qualities and things to these created objects, and they worship them, whereas the atheists, what they do is they take the qualities that, or the attributes that belong to Allah, and then they put them into creation arrogantly, so that they don't have to worship Allah. So that they don't have to worship Allah, right? So they'll say, for example, yes, the sun is just, it is just burning gases and energy, and it's not, it wasn't created with intent and purpose. And the fact that it's regularly, orbiting, that's just, it just happened. Matter basically just by chance arranged itself in that way after the Big Bang. And, the gases combined together, and then, plants formed. And it just happened to, miraculously go into a orbit, with precision. This is all just, you know. So really what they are doing is to avoid worshipping their creator. They create these elaborate stories and they take the attributes that belong to Allah, knowledge, wisdom, irada, wish, you know, power, and other things, and they basically put them into the creation. They ascribe them to the creation, right? So it's a bit like when whoever made this bottle, or whoever made this phone, whoever made this bottle, for example, we know that the person who made the bottle has knowledge, has wisdom, there's a reason behind it, has irada, has a will, has choice, has power, has ability. And then what you do is, instead of affirming the man or the men or the people who evidently created the bottle, you take the attributes that were involved in the creation of this bottle, knowledge, wisdom, power, ability, irada, you know, wish, whatever, and you throw it back into the bottle. Right? So you know, it's you're trying to avoid having to affirm the maker or the creator. So in the same way, that's what atheists do. Atheists, all they're basically an arrogant category of the mushrikun, right? Because they associate matter, they make that a partner with Allah, right? So they give matter the attributes and qualities that belong to Allah. So matter is self-organizing, self-generating, self-organizing. It intelligently comes together by itself, you know, to make, you know, life. And, you know, whereas what we see everything, you know, it points to a maker and a creator who has the attributes, right? Everything we see in the creation, we see wisdom, we see all sorts of wisdoms, we see benevolence, we see, you know, Allah's care and concern for His servants. We see that in everything that we experience and see, clearly pointing to a creator. So if you deny a creator, and you know, this is just polytheism. It's shirk. It's shirk of a similar type. So what we should know from the first two points then is the definition of ibadah. What is the importance and the status of ibadah? It's that for which we have been created. It's that which brings to human like perfection. The best of Allah's creation, prophets and messengers are described with that, and they are given that as a label. It's something that has to be, you have to maintain till you die. You can never escape being a servant of Allah, and so on and so forth, right? That's point number two. Point number three, now that we understand the first two points, how do we divide the creation? How do we divide Allah's creatures and Allah's servants on the basis of what we have just defined and understood about ibadah, right? How do we define, or how do we divide Allah's servants, right? Obviously, there's different classifications. Like at the beginning of Surah Al-Baqarah, for example, Allah divides all of mankind into three. There are the believers, there are the kuffar, and there are the munafiqun, right? This is the beginning of Surah Al-Baqarah. All of mankind is either a believer, a kafir, or a munafiq. This is one way of categorizing mankind. But here, what we are doing here, it's in relation to ubudiyya, right? And there are two categories. There are two categories of servitude, or being a slave or a servant. The first one is what we call an abd, someone who is a servant with an ubudiyya kawniyya. Ubudiyya kawniyya, right? This is the first category, right? What this means is you are subservient to the laws in Allah's creation, right? You are subservient to the laws in Allah's creation. This applies to everybody. Everybody is an abd in this sense, right? The polytheist, the mushrik, is an abd in this sense. The Jew, the Christian, the Magian, everybody is an abd. What do we mean by abd? It means that, for example, you know, if I don't drink water, I'm going to die. Just because I'm a Muslim, I'm a believer, I'm a muwahid, does not mean that somehow, you know, if I don't drink water, I'm not going to die. No. Right? I'm going to die if I drink water. Likewise, just because I'm a person of tawheed, it doesn't mean that if I jump off a building, I'm not going to die. But somehow I'm going to, you know, fly and, you know, we say, no, I'm going to die. Right? These are the laws in Allah's creation. They apply to everybody. Right? So a believer becomes sick. He becomes ill. He dies. Right? All of these things are universal to everybody, irrespective of creed or belief. Right? This is what we call the ubudiyyah kawniyyah. This is in relation to the fact that Allah has created His creation with laws, with principles, with rules, like the physical creation, this is ways and means, causes and effects, and it applies to everybody. Everybody is treated equally in this respect, right? So this is the ubudiyyah. So everybody is an abd in this sense. The second is the abd with the ubudiyyah shar'iyyah. Right, this is now the legislated servitude. The first one you can call it creational servitude. Creational servitude. The fact that you are a creation, you're a creature of, you know, made through matter, through and all of its components, and there are laws and rules that govern your existence. You are an abd in that sense. And so therefore you are in creational servitude. However, the second category is what we call the legislated or the legislative servitude, right? And this means that you are a worshipper of Allah. You are a worshipper of Allah, and you are obedient to Allah. You follow His command. You follow His commands. You keep away from His prohibitions. This is the meaning of legislated servitude. Right? That you follow that which is legislated for you to become an abd, with the meaning of ibadah, with the meaning of ibadah, which is requested, and, you know, which is the purpose for which you have been created. This type of servitude is what distinguishes between a kafir and a mu'min, right? This is the distinguishing point between a kafir and a mu'min, right? This is the people of Islam, the people of Iman, the ibad of Allah. They are the ones who worship Allah and worship only Him. This is the dividing line between al-iman wal-kufr. Right. So, Does a person become, you know, a worshipper or a muwahid if he believes just in the first one? Like, if you believe Allah is the creator, the provider, the owner, that you are indeed a servant in the sense that you can't escape certain laws in Allah's creation, does that make you a believer? Does that make you an abd? No. This does not make you, you know, to affirm this aspect does not make you a believer. Otherwise, Iblis would be a believer. Yes, Iblis would be a believer. But, you know, Iblis, he affirms that Allah is his Lord. Where he said, Rabbi fa'anzirni ila yawmi yub'athun. Where he said, oh my Lord, Rabbi. He referred to Allah as his Lord. My Lord, give me respite till the day that they are raised. He affirms Allah is his Lord. He knows that he is an abd, with the meaning of the create in the creational sense. He knows he's an abd. That doesn't make him a believer. Likewise, the polytheists, the mushriks of Mecca, وَلَا إِن سَأَلْتَهُمْ مَنْ خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ لَيَكُولُنَّ اللَّهِ. If you were to ask them who created the heavens and the earth, they will surely say Allah. Just because the pagans of Mecca, they affirmed Allah is the creator, is their Lord, Lord of the heavens, this did not make them believers. That's not enough to make you a Muslim, a believer, an abd, right? Just to affirm the creational reality, right? That everything is in servitude, everything follows certain laws, like physical laws, you know. This doesn't make you a believer. So, this is point number three, right? Point number three is that mankind is divided into two types, that servitude, and likewise the servants of Allah, they're divided into two types. There are those who are servants and slaves of Allah, but only in the creational sense, right? So this would be every atheist, every Yahudi, every Nasrani, every Mushrik, every Magian, every type of person. He comes into the creational servitude, as we do as well, as do believers, Muslims, right? But then there is the legislative servitude, which is that which Allah created us for, and for which He sent messengers and revealed books, right? And that's for our benefit, for our perfection. And so this is the ubudiyya shar'iyya, the legislated ubudiyya, right? And so we need to be clear that this legislated ubudiyya is that which is the foundation of Islam, the foundation of Tawheed, and the foundation of the call of all the prophets and messengers. Okay, once we've understood these three points, then after that Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah talks about how people go astray in the issue of ubudiyya. How they go astray in the issue of al-ubudiyya. Right, so this would be al-dalal. Al-dalal fi mas'alati al-ubudiyya. Right, how does misguidance occur in the issue of servitude to Allah Azza wa Jal? So, right, in order to understand this point, we have to join all of these points together, right? Because all the points are connected. So we know that Allah Azza wa Jal has given us a mashi'a or irada and a qudra, right? We all have a choice. We have the ability to think and reflect, to make a choice. We also have the ability, we have the qudra, we have the physical ability to do actions, right? So we are given these two things. We have irada, we have mashi'a, right? We have ikhtiyar, we have choice, and we are able to act. We have qudra. Everybody knows this. Everybody has this. And by way of this, we are able to choose that which is good. We are able to abandon that which is evil. And following on from this, once we choose that which is good and abandon that which is evil, so we choose what is good, meaning Tawheed, and obedience to Allah and His messengers. And we abandon what is evil, right? So we abandon shirk, al-fahsha, al-munkar, al-baghi, all those things which are, you know, Allah has prohibited, right? So from the irada that we have, and from the qudra that we have, and by reflecting upon what Allah revealed of books and messengers, we are able to make a choice, right? We choose good and we abandon evil. And once we do that, this necessitates, this is the important point, it necessitates from this that we also enjoin the good and prohibit the evil. Right? These two things are connected. So when we make the ikhtiyar, the choice, to follow that which is good and abandon that which is evil, right? So good is Tawheed, obedience to the messengers, you know, prayer, fasting, charity, and all the other things. We abandon what is evil, which is ashirk, and al-fahsha, al-munkar, all the other evils, and we act upon that. This at the same time follows on and is connected to, by necessity, it follows on from that we enjoin the good and we prohibit the evil. Al-amr bil ma'roof wal-nahy anil munkar. It follows on from that. Right? It automatically follows. Why? Because if you believe that Tawheed is the truth, and obedience to the messengers is the truth, and in prayer there is
islah, you know, rectification in charity, that is, you know, you believe all these things, and likewise, conversely, that shirk is batil, and it is dhulm, and, you know, stealing is wrong, fornication is wrong, adultery is wrong, gambling is wrong, drinking is wrong, and all the other things, they are evil, and they cause corruption, right? It follows by necessity that al-amr bil-ma'roof wa nahi al-munkar follows by necessity. Has to follow by necessity. And likewise, following on from that, it also follows by necessity that you have loyalty and allegiance to whoever follows this, and you abandon and you have disloyalty from whoever does not follow this, right? Meaning, al-hub wal-bughd, love and hate, loyalty and disloyalty automatically follows thereafter. Yeah?
Is there anyone outside with BMW white SW12 GFX? No, white W? All right.
No one has, no. Okay, thanks. So we were saying, yes. Yeah, so we're basically what we're doing is there's an important sequence that you have to understand, right? And the people who've gone astray in this topic of al-ubudiyya have made mistakes in this sequence, at different stages in this sequence, right? So I'll explain it. Let's start again. We've got to make sure we understand this very clearly. So first of all, let's start. There's ubudiyya kawniyya. What does that mean? It means that everything is a slave to Allah. Everything is obedient to Allah, whether it likes it or not. Right? So this is universal to everything and to everybody. Right? The sun has to obey the course given to it. The moon has to obey the course given to it. Water has the properties that it's been given. It can never deviate from those properties. Likewise, you and I and all creatures, plants, everything, right? There are physical laws that govern everything. This is ubudiyya kawniyya, right? This is the universal, this is the creational, servitude, right? That's point number one. From there, we know that we as men and jinn and men, we have been given the ability to think and reflect and to choose and to act. Right? Think, reflect, to know, to think, to reflect, and to choose and act. Right, so when we exercise that, when we do that, and we follow the guidance, we choose the good. We do that which is good, and we abandon that which is evil. Right? Because that's the purpose for which we've been created, to worship Allah. Right? So we now actualize that. This is now tahqiq. Tahqiq al-ubudiyya. We are now actualizing it in our, you know, in our actions. Right? So we establish the prayer, we give the zakah, we do all the obligatory things, and we keep away from all the prohibited things. And we do that because these things are rectification and good and wholesome, and these things are evil, corruption, harmful, destructive, right? It follows on from that by necessity that we must also therefore enjoin the good and prohibit the evil. Al-amr bil-ma'roof wa nahi al-munkar. And similarly, it follows on also from that, when we command the good and prohibit the evil, that there's going to be some people who are not going to accept the message. And they are going to, in fact, fight against the message even, right? They will oppose the message. And there are some people who are going to accept the message. So following on from al-amr bil-ma'roof wa nahi al-munkar is al-hub wal-bughd fillah, right? Love and hate for the sake of Allah. And al-wala wal-bara, which is loyalty and disownment, right? And so basically, you know, we hate kufr and shirk and its people, and we love iman and Tawheed and its people. Right, so the people who've gone astray in this topic, like, you know, we discussed it in the book, like, you know, there are some people who don't make a distinction between the creational servitude and the legislative servitude, right? There are some Sufis who say, no, everything which happens in Allah's creation is something that He loves, He's pleased with. All religions are correct. There are so many ways to Allah. Every religion is just a different path to Allah. You know, this now means that, you know, well, that means, well, there's no point in joining good and prohibiting evil then. Because if every religion is true, then why are we enjoining good, prohibiting evil then? And in that case, how then can we, well, there's no such thing as love and hate for the sake of Allah. Like, see, these other principles are then demolished, right? If you make mistakes somewhere along the line, right? And you can make a mistake either at the beginning, not distinguishing between ubudiyya kawniya and ubudiyya shar'iyya, or you can make it further along the line, further along the line. And Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah, in this book, he discussed different categories of people who've made mistakes at some point or some stage in this sequence of, you know, in this sequence. And he mentioned different categories of people, right? But the key thing here is just to realize that there's a, like a sequence that follows, right? So he says that, you know, Ibn Taymiyyah mentioned in the book that in this topic here, many, many people went astray. And what they did is that they did not distinguish between Al-Qadr, Al-Qadr, which is Allah's creational decree, what happens just purely from a physical, actual point of view, and His, you know, that which is the Shara, the legislation, right? They didn't distinguish between these two things, and they said that everything that happens from Al-Qadr, Allah willed it because He loves it. Allah willed it because He loves it. This means that Allah willed and wanted and loved for shirk to happen, for murder to happen, for stealing to happen, for oppression to happen. If you don't make that distinction between Al-Qadr and Ash-Shara, which is legislation, if you don't distinguish between the two, you treat them to be the same. Basically, what you are saying is everything that happens, whatever happens, from the actions of men, Allah is pleased with it and loves it. That's why He willed it, right? And so if you do not make that distinction at the beginning, this will eventually lead you to not make a distinction between the Creator and the created, right? So we mentioned this, that many of these people from the Sufis, they started off not distinguishing between Al-Qadr and Ash-Shar, right? And then this led them in a series of steps eventually to not making a distinction between Al-Khaliq wal-Khalq, right? The Creator, Al-Khaliq wal-Makhluq, right? The Creator and the Created. And this obviously leads to tremendous misguidance, tremendous disbelief. In fact, this disbelief is greater disbelief than the disbelief of the, you know, An-Nasara, because they said Allah became Isa. Allah became Isa, right? He united with and became Isa. Whereas these people, they said Allah Azza wa Jal is everything. The only thing which exists is Allah. All of existence is Allah. There is no creator and the created. There's only Allah. So they made Allah to be everything and everything to be Allah. This is greater disbelief than that of the Jews, than that of the Christians, sorry, of the Nasara. And even the Yahud have something of this as well. So, so the point being that the way that we escape this misguidance that many factions fell into is that we make tahqiq, we actualize the ubudiyya of Allah, we become servants of Allah in the way described, right? By following His command, obeying His messenger, and seeking aid from Allah, and we don't use al-qadr as an excuse, right? Al-qadr does not become an excuse. So we don't say, Allah willed for me to commit this oppression. I don't use al-qadr as an argument to justify my deeds, right? Nor do I invent or innovate any idea into the religion, right? So in this issue of al-qadr, there were two groups that went astray, as you know, right? Well, which are the two ways that the people went astray in al-qadr? First one, al-qadariyya. What did they say? Al-qadariyya, they said that man creates his own actions outside of Allah's control and power, right? They said this because they wrongly believed that if Allah is the one who decrees and wills and creates our actions, how then can He punish and reward us, right? And so they said, therefore, man must be outside of Allah's control and power when he does his actions, right? And this is misguidance. This is the Mu'tazila, the Qadariyya. So they deny Al-Qadr, right? And the other group on the other side, the Jabariyya, Al-Jahm bin Safwan and others, they said, a man has absolutely no choice. He's forced to do what he does. He's like a leaf in the wind or the branch in the wind. The wind blows and the branch moves. Has no option, right? He has no choice. It's moved and forced by the wind. So they treat us as if like we don't really have any choice. We don't really have any real choice. It's not really us who are acting. It's Allah acting through our bodies, right? So it's a bit like, a person takes a knife and he cuts a loaf of bread, right? What's cutting the loaf of bread? Is it the knife or is it the hand? Is it the knife or is it the hand? What's doing the cutting? Right, so what they say is that we are like the knife. The knife is cutting the bread, but it's something else is moving the knife. And we have no choice, right? This is the Jabariyya. So they made a mistake in the issue of al-qadr. These mistakes that you see here are the very mistakes that the pagans and polytheists of previous nations they fell into. Right? This is in the Quran. What did the polytheists say? What did the mushrikun say? They said, Law sha Allah, ma ashrakna wala aba'una wala harramna min shay. Right? If Allah had willed, we would not have committed shirk, nor would our forefathers. They are now using the argument of al-qadr, right? Allah made us do it. If Allah made us do it, how can it be wrong? How can what we are doing wrong? Because if Allah didn't want us to do it, He wouldn't have made us do it. But because we are doing it, and Allah has decreed it, therefore how can we be wrong? Right? This is their argument. They're using al-qadr as an argument. It's like saying, if I came and punched somebody in the face, and I said, Allah made me do it. If Allah didn't want that to happen, He would have not willed me to punch you in the face. You can't use the argument, right? Because you've committed shirk knowingly, and you were warned against the shirk, or you've been warned against the shirk, so you can't use the argument of al-qadr. And likewise, they said, wala harramna min shay. Nor would we have made things haram. Things which were halal, we wouldn't have made them haram. So basically they are using the argument of al-qadr. And these are the two ways that people or nations go astray. Right? Number one, they justify their actions by way of al-qadr. Right? We have no choice. We're forced to do what we're forced to do. Free choice is an illusion. There's no free will. Right? And secondly, they innovate into the religion. They innovate, right? So they make that which is halal to be haram. They make that which is haram to be halal. Or they introduce things into the religion, right? They alter the legislation. Or they bring things into the religion which is not from it. Either beliefs or acts of worship. Right? So this now is alteration of the religion, you know, inventing, you know, or bringing things into the religion. These are the two ways that previous nations went astray in the issue of al-qadr and ash-shara. Right? Al-qadr meaning you use al-qadr as an argument to justify your evil deeds. And ash-shara, legislation, meaning you innovate into it. You alter it, you innovate into it. And this becomes like the foundation of misguidance. So what we'll do, I think, you know, we're not going to finish it in one lesson, but inshallah we'll stop at this point, and we'll continue with the summarization in the next lesson, inshallah ta'ala. So far we've covered 4 points, or the fourth point. So what we are really doing is we are looking at the structure of the book and the general argument of the book and how the whole book is basically tied together, how it's all tied together. So we'll stop there and we'll continue in the next lesson. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa sallallahu ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in.